This is Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. Good afternoon. I'm Chris Nolte. On the program today, we'll talk with Joe Wood, who represents an Indiana nonprofit called InvestEd. It's a nonprofit that helps family members as well as students work on ways to support themselves through college or university. They've been active in various activities, including here in Northwest Indiana, and we'll find out more about the latest event coming up. Also, too, we'll have another edition in Green Fleet Radio with Carl Lissick. This time, we'll find out more about what is called the Michiana Area Council of Governments and how they participate in sustainability projects. And Lakeshore Focus back with you one more time to take a look at the big news stories of last year and what's ahead for 2018. That and more coming up, but first the news. This is Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Chris Nolte. It's almost that time for families and students of young people headed off to college or university to start filling out those FAFSAs, those forms that you have to fill out to be able to get financial aid. And an organization called InvestEd is here to help. And we have with us Joe Wood, who's with InvestEd, based in Indianapolis, to talk about the next big event coming up here in the process of helping people get ready to pay for going back to college or staying in college, I guess, for that matter. Joe, thanks for joining us today on Regionally Speaking.
Thanks for having me, Chris.
For folks that are not familiar with InvestEd, please explain what this nonprofit's all about and how you've gotten involved all these years in helping people out.
Sure, Chris. Happy to do it. InvestEd's been around Indiana, helping Hoosiers for about 35-plus years, founded in 1980, and we are the leader in helping Indiana students and families find ways to pay for and afford after college. We have a long history as a friendly student lender and a trusted advisor. We've counseled thousands of students every year. We counsel thousands of students and annually. And we've originated tens of thousands of loans to help people fund their educational dreams. And right now, we've been working in the last few months to release a refinancing option. So you were talking about FAFSA time to pay for college. We do all that. We've got a team of trusted former financial aid officers and education people who know all the ins and outs and all the edges and corners of FAFSA that need to be completed to help people find ways to fund their education wisely. So we're trying to help people do it with the least amount of debt so that they can take advantage of scholarships and grants and all the generous state and federal money that's available for people. But now we have folks who are graduating, and as you guys have probably heard in the news, $1.4 trillion in student debt in Indiana that averages around $29,000.
I know that you have been active, and you say all across the state, but in particular here in Northwest Indiana, that you've been out there during these times when it's getting ready to fill out the FAFSA paperwork to turn in, that you've had several events up in Valparaiso helping students out there and elsewhere and here in Northwest Indiana. What do you seem to find in taking a look at how these events have turned out as to whether the projects seem to be helping and making it a little easier for the students as well as the family members to get through this whole process, which is very confusing at the very least?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Confusing, but pretty manageable, Chris, frankly. And tonight, just so happens you talk about our events. We have two events up there tonight, one at Lake Central High School and one at Bishop Knoll Institute, starting at 5 and 6:30, respectively. Our guys do 400-plus events. I think we're going to push past 430 of these events around the state of Indiana this year. And essentially, we'll do whatever the school would like us to do or whatever the host would like us to do. In some cases, that's past the completion. Indiana ranks 39th in the country in fastest completed, so, that's not a very good number, we don't think, and we think it can be improved on. In other cases, frankly, Chris, people they don't know, unfortunately, how generous the state of Indiana is with grants and scholarship dollars, and so we try and educate people about that, open up for them, what the possibilities are. I think you'd be surprised. I know I'm always surprised by the number of people who You know, I think our guys tend to start these conversations with these groups. You know, who knows the price of a new car? Everybody knows the price of a new car.
Right.
If you ask that same group how much college costs, they couldn't tell you.
Well, they could probably guess, but they'd only be guessing because they could look on maybe a college or university's website and check in from the financial aid office. They may be able to give some ballpark figure of how much it's going to be, and that'll just give them an idea of what tuition and room and board and meals would cost. But that's about it, I would imagine.
Yeah, and there's tons of opportunities when they get to the school for work study and all kinds of information on university-based scholarships and grants. In addition to state and federal grants and scholarships, there's university-based aid as well. So I think people just need to really own it and really go out there and ask as many questions as they can and be, you know, work hard in their own interest. And there's plenty of ways to pay for college without going into debt.
We're talking with Joe Wood, who is with InvestEd, an organization based out of Indianapolis, an Indiana nonprofit that has been making higher education possible for Hoosier families for more than three decades now through financial aid literacy and lending support and other projects. Joe, you talk about these events that InvestEd helps out in across the state. Tell us what it is like to set something up. We'll say that some organization or actually a school comes to you and say, hey, we'd like to be able to set something up for our students, especially those seniors, juniors even, that need a little help. They need to be able to plan properly so when they do want to go to college that they'll be ready to go. What's it like to set up a meeting like the ones that you've had, including the ones that are coming up here?
Sure. All they need to do is call our guys at 317-715-9002 or go on our website at investedindiana.org and, follow the clicks to contact one of our representatives, and they'll be happy to schedule them up. And like I said, it's a very simple process. You simply call or contact us, the email or through the web. And we'll probably get back with you that day to schedule it up. I tell you the other thing, Chris, you know, there's a lot of folks go through this process, go through college, and that's the new thing we've got going starting the first of the year is refinancing loans.
Yeah, so perfect. I wanted to spend some time talking about this very first annual Indiana College Refi Week that is coming up here January 29th through February 2nd, because that's we always look about organizations with helping on filling out the FAFSA and other places to help get that initial financial aid started here. But then you've got to look what do you do on the other end of it there. You've said, oh my gosh, I've got these big bills to pay now that I've graduated from college. That's scary enough as it is to deal with that, to help reduce all kinds of ways that you can help people reduce their student loan debt.
Yeah, we say that around here. We say that when you have to apply for a loan to pay for college, a lot of times it's maximum pressure at the worst possible time. So you're trying to have some prerequisite classes you got to have this semester so that you can stay on track to graduate in 4 years. And, you know, you'll sign anything at that point. And unfortunately, folks do that. And sometimes they sign up for loans that are probably less favorable terms because, you know, for whatever reason. And what we've doing during Refi Week is just simply educating people that, you know, having made that loan doesn't mean you have to stay with that loan forever. You can, again, go to our website, investedindiana.org, or give one of our guys a call at 317-715-9002, and they'd be happy to walk you through a process of determining whether or not refinancing works for you or doesn't. They may be able to help you. If you only have federal loans, they can walk you through that process. You know, refinancing is not for everyone. You know, some folks have great terms, great conditions. They're affordable, and they don't need anything other than just give themselves some peace of mind that they've solved the problem, that their situation is okay. Other folks, I mean, just as an example, if you have $35,000 in loans, 8.5%, and you can save a percent on that, and it's possible to do these days, you'd save $110 a month in loan payments.
Yeah.
That's a lot of savings for somebody right out of college, you know, with their first job.
I imagine, too, that they probably have as well. Not only you have people that have not only a high amount of college debt, from their student loans, but they probably are maybe in the worst of terms. Maybe they need to get some type of adjustment for their income. They may start out where they are not making quite as much, and they need to have those rates adjusted so they don't find that they're spending all of their money that they earn in whatever first jobs that they happen to get in paying off their student debt.
Absolutely. If they've got federal loans, you know, the federal income contingent repayment plans, you know, our folks can advise you about that. And again, this is free. If you get, you know, robocalls or letters, I think it's important to make sure if you're going to talk to those kind of folks that you make sure you're not going to pay a fee for that, because you shouldn't have to. There should never be a fee to get advice on how to manage your student loans. So the reason folks like us here at InvestEd exist is to help folks with that. But, you know, if you got a federal loan, we're happy to advise you on income contingent repayment. If you have federal and private loans, you may be able to save some money by extending your term. You know, you may pay a little more in interest, but your monthly payment can be lowered and make it more affordable for a while. These are all simple interest loans, which means you can prepay them at any time. So there's not a lot of penalty in doing that.
We've talked here about refinancing and other ways to be able to reduce a student's loan debt load they are carrying after they get their diploma. And I'm sure there are probably ways too, as you mentioned, and we mentioned briefly here at the start of our conversation about on the other end of the process when they're getting started at going to school and taking advantage of finding all these different opportunities that are out there, all these little niches of money someplace that they can apply for or actually get. There'll be probably some opportunities that exist out there that people can actually pick up a not only a loan, but they could pick up a grant of some type that'll help pay for their school.
Absolutely. We have all those resources on our website, investedindiana.org. We list a whole slew of scholarship search, grant search sites through our website that people can access, and there are a whole bunch of them on the internet as well. We've heard stories, and they're credible stories, of folks who, you know, kids who spent their summer writing essays who actually pay for their college for the year through grants and scholarships. So it's not easy sometimes. Sometimes you have to really search to find one that fits your particular circumstance, or a couple of them that fit your particular circumstance. But overall, with the O'Bannon grants, 21st Century Scholars in the state of Indiana, Indiana is a very generous place when it comes to looking for that free money. And every free dollar that you use is a dollar you don't have to leverage. There's a gigantic multiplier there for people.
When we talk about the upcoming college refi week that is going to be happening here in Indiana, there's going to be a very special event, I guess, on one of the days near the end of the week, on January 30th. There's going to be a student loan refi happy hour. Will you explain that for us, please?
Sure. We're gonna have a happy hour in downtown Indianapolis, and if the turnout is good, we're going to try it around the state as well, you know, in future weeks. The idea is to simply get people together in a casual atmosphere, talk them through, you know, what the process is, arm them with some, you know, some knowledge about, you know, what kind of information they need to gather. In this case, you know, your first step is obviously to gather all of your loan information so you know what you have before you, you know, try and find, do comparisons and figure out if your situation needs to be adjusted. But, you know, we're doing that downtown Indianapolis at Industrious. I think it's January 30th, starting at 5:30. So folks can come in and have a drink and listen to us wax poetic about student loans. It'll be fabulous.
Well, Joe, it'll be certainly an experience, and it would be nice to see that if that one in Indianapolis is successful, there'll be others held across the state, including up here in Northwest Indiana as well. We've been talking with Joe Wood, who represents InvestEd, which is an Indiana nonprofit that has for more than 35 years been helping make higher education possible for Hoosier families through ways that in turn will not only cover the cost of college, but also being able to properly be able to finance one's way through college the right way rather than just guessing at it here. Joe, thank you very much for being with us to spend some time talking about what the organization does, as well as the upcoming first annual Indiana College Refi Week coming up on January 29th through February 2nd. And we hope that everything goes well and that we do happen to see you back up here in addition to these other seminars that happen, like the ones happening tonight. Thank you very much for being with us to talk about it today.
Thanks, Chris. To have folks give us a call or check us out on the website, investedindiana.org. We'll be happy to help them for free.
Thanks, Joe. On this edition of Regionally Speaking, it's time for Green Fleet Radio, and here is your host of Green Fleet Radio, Carl Lissick.
Good morning, and welcome to Green Fleet Radio. Today, our guest is Mr. James Turnwald. He's the Executive Director of the Michiana Area of Council of Governments, or MACOG. James, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Well, James, tell us a little bit about MACOG and what MACOG does as the Michiana Area of Council of Governments.
Yeah, so essentially local governments voluntarily formed MACOG, the Michiana Area Council of Governments, back in 1970. So we're turning 48 years old this year.
Happy birthday.
And the purpose of, thank you, the purpose of this of the organization is really to study and attempt to resolve for the benefit of each member and then the region, areas of interlocal issues. So what is an area of interlocal issues, you might ask? It's those things that are not necessarily held by traditional municipal boundaries. So that might be transportation or transit or economic development, environment, and kind of other issues that impact the region. So the simplest way that I explain this is that when you're a motorist, you don't necessarily realize when you're driving that you're transitioning from one city into a county or into a town. And so motorists don't acknowledge those municipal boundaries. And so we work on those types of topics that transcend traditional jurisdictional boundaries so that governments can coordinate together.
I see. I know MACOG was very busy in 2017. Could you tell our listeners a little bit about some of your highlights?
Sure. So from working on comprehensive plans for towns to seeing Line Bike launch in South Bend, assisting local governments in applying for community crossroads road funding, 2017 was a really busy year. One of the big aspects that we got into was solar. So in early 2017, MACOG hosted a SolSmart advisor to provide technical assistance to three of our cities, the city of Goshen, South Bend, and Napanee, to achieve SolSmart designation. Now, SolSmart designation might not be a familiar term. It's a program that was run by the Department of Energy, which helps aim cities and counties to capture the economic opportunities associated with solar energy. And they do this by providing technical assistance, which helps cities evaluate city processes, such as zoning and building codes and building permits to make sure that they are solar-friendly as possible, which sometimes is a lot harder than it sounds. So that was a large undertaking in the early part of 2017, which resulted in Napanee achieving a bronze designation and Goshen achieving a gold designation. And the city of South Bend is continuing to work towards their gold designation.
Very exciting.
Yeah. No, it was very exciting. Goshen was actually one of the first 40 communities in the United States to be designated.
Wow, that's very exciting. So what are some of the MACOG's plans for 2018?
Sure. So as we look forward to 2018, a lot of the work that we'll be working on includes the Volkswagen Mitigation Trust and planning for that. For those who aren't familiar, there's an environmental mitigation trust resulting from the settlement with Volkswagen for their diesel emissions issues. And so the goal is with that, there's about $41 million that Indiana has in trust, where we'll be assisting municipalities with trying to work on various projects to improve their fleet. And so that might include replacing non-road support equipment or retrofitting various diesel vehicles that they have in their fleet. And so we'll be seeking a lot of that funding. Additionally, we'll be working on our Access to Core Services plan, which is a newer plan for our organization. It's going to be an in-depth and data-driven review of access and accessibility in the region across the four major modes of transportation, so walking, biking, transit, and automobile. And we think accessibility is a key component of measuring how well our transportation system is functioning and serving the people using it. And so the aim is really to make sure that we have a regional transportation system that not just provides fast and safe transportation, but it's also providing accessible and convenient transportation.
That sounds like a big undertaking, James. So how can people learn more about MACOG?
Sure. Sure. People can learn more about what we're doing at MACOG by visiting our website, which is MACOG.com. We're posting information there all the time about our various key dates that are coming up, our agendas for all of our public meetings, and there's detailed descriptions about all of our programs there.
You know, I know you said about public meetings, and I know that, you know, from attending some of those public meetings, you do get a lot of public support in the Michiana area. But I know you're always looking for more people to get involved with different programs and initiatives that are going on throughout the area. So if people would like to get involved with MACOG, how would they go about that, James?
Yeah, so we offer a number of different public programs. This last year, we helped lead a voluntary effort called Solarize, which was focused on educating the public about going solar and help facilitate over 70 people install solar installations on their household this year, and about another 20 in 2018 will install. So we constantly offer those kind of public education opportunities. One of our other programs is the Partners for Clean Air, which is a program focused on educating citizens and businesses to make voluntary efforts to clean the air. The program started back in 1994, and each year we do an awards luncheon, which this year will be on April 25th. And so we strongly encourage people to go to MACOG.com, look at those programs, seek out those kind of key dates. We post everything there. Additionally, our main governing board meetings are always on the second Wednesday of the month and typically held in our offices, so they can always participate that way as well.
Wonderful. And any closing thoughts as we come to the end of our program, James?
Sure. It's been an exciting year for 2017. The organization has been around for 48 years, and we're constantly seeking additional ways to help our local governments and advance our region. We've seen a lot of growth and development really in the region throughout 2017 as a result of regional cities and those efforts. And so I'm very excited for 2018 and all that it holds as we start out on that new year.
Well, happy birthday, 48 years, and that will do it for today's edition of the Green Fleet Radio. I'm your host, Carl Lissick. Thanks again to our guest, James Turnwald. He's the executive director of MACOG. And Green Fleet Radio airs three times every Wednesday on Lakeshore Public Radio. Be sure to join in and visit us online at southshorecleancities.org. And thanks for joining us. Remember, it's never too late to begin your environmental legacy. Thank you, James.
Thank you.
Green Fleet Radio is made possible by South Shore Clean Cities. And as you heard Carl mention, that you can hear Green Fleet Radio three times on Wednesdays, including here on Regionally Speaking. Podcasts of Green Fleet Radio also available online on our website, lakeshorepublicradio.org, as well as on NPR One. Just search for WLPR. This is Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Chris Nolte. As he has in the past, Lakeshore Focus host Keith Kirkpatrick has brought in two local journalists to talk about the big news stories of the year, 2017 in particular, and now a look ahead into 2018. And here's the conversation.
I think it can be clearly stated that 2017 was an unusual and stressful year. It's over. But the history of what happened in our region and the stories that stayed with us impact us even now. What were the big stories? What touched our hearts, aroused our fears, or made us think? Here with us in our studio are two of my favorite people who happen to be journalists from our two major newspapers in this region, Krista Zivanovic with The Times and Jerry Davich with The Post. You know, this is our sixth year doing this.
I didn't realize.
And you guys look much better than just 6 years old. I mean, I think you're a little older than that, probably.
Don't show us the earlier ones.
Yeah, right.
We don't want to see how we look 6 years ago.
So, yeah. But just think when we get to the 10-year mark or something doing this show.
I would love that.
Willing.
Yes. I'll bring a champagne.
Okay. So this is good. So let's just jump right into it. Top stories. You guys always give some thought.
Chris, do you want to go first?
No,
last year's top story?
You go first, Jerry.
Well, you know, there's some big heavy hitters from last year, and I thought Lake County Sheriff John Buncinch, of course, being...
That was number one on my
really?
List.
Really? That's because people talk about that the most.
Yep.
That's why I bring it up, what people are talking
well,
about
the
most.
Well, it's the gift that keeps on giving, but
oh
go ahead.
Oh, my God, in this region...
What does that mean for a journalist, the gift that keeps on giving?
Well, then
you get to write
about
it more and
well,
more?
We had the issue with the sentencing.
Yes.
You know, that was prolonged, and somehow the Times got involved in it because our columnist, Mark Chase, had written a column just innocently. I mean, he wasn't meaning anything negative. He just said, I'm going to publish all the names of the people who write letters of, you know,
his
sympathy
support.
And commendation in support of him to mitigate the sentencing. And he said, you know, that's my prerogative. Suddenly an article appears in the Indiana Lawyer about how the press is inserting itself in the news and this is egregious and shameful and we shouldn't do it. But another professor was quoted in the article at the end saying, it's all public record, and if they want to list those names, it's up to them, and what's the big deal?
It was fresh, a bit unusual.
How do we always end up with a story of corruption as one of the
Well, we didn't have to lead with that, because I was going to lead with national news that ripples into Northwest Indiana. But it matters in this region, and people know it, and we have a bad, infamous reputation, and people don't forget that. So when they contact me, they say, when I asked for certain stories from last year that stood out to them, that's the first thing I thought. Plus, it's the Lake County. It's our sheriff. It's our sheriff who's supposed to hold us to the ideals of good role model.
I'm going to divert from the script. We don't have a script anyway.
Yeah, right.
So it's interesting. You made the comment about national stories. It felt like, did national stories really almost overshadow the local stories this year?
Definitely. It
felt like
And they rippled into our region, especially because Trump. We can't get a day in our newspaper business without mentioning the word Trump.
It's really true.
It's crazy.
And what do you mean by rippling in? How did it ripple
in? Well, we get calls all the time, and I'm sure you do too, about criticizing us for headlines that are not favorable to him
or
headlines that are too favorable to him or why are you putting this news in the paper or why isn't there enough?
So we've always had national news seeping in or rippling into our region. Obama, when he was president also, but especially now with Trump, he divided everything. And our country's divided, and our region is divided. And our readership is divided because of that. I mean, I've lost some readers from a columnist perspective, and I've gained some just because of that factor. So everything has Trump's stamp on it, whether we like it or not. I mean, he's an egomaniac who loves his name everywhere, and he's got it everywhere now.
And for Jerry in particular, Jerry has said, you know, I'm going to keep writing about Trump now, even though, you know, both papers, columnists and reporters, our bread and butter is local news, but the local people can't get enough of Trump either for or against. So Jerry has said, this has become a local story.
And where's the chicken and the egg there?
Exactly. Yeah,
but it's interesting, the sexual harassment charges that have been all over the country, that's one that hasn't really bled too much in the area. We haven't had...
Surprisingly so.
Well, wait. You know, we tend to lag behind a little, so things
What are you trying
might,
to say, Krista?
I don't know.
2018,
might,
the year of sexual harassment charges
in
the region.
We'll see. I don't know. You know, look at how long it took these national ones to foment. Years and years of cover-ups and... You know, dilly-dallying and shilly-shallying, as my dad used to say. And now suddenly
we learn some interesting terms every time we do this show.
From you know, Krista.
They are. So how about another story from you?
Well, continuing on with Buntzich, we still have Mayor Snyder, who now has asked for his trial to be put back. This is Portage Mayor.
He's definitely going to be the 2018 story.
Yes, he's going to be the 2018, this year's big story, I think. And so I just didn't want that to go unmentioned, because not that I feel sorry for Lake County and its inordinate amount of corruption, but, you know, it has seeped now into Porter County. So
there was quite a bit of press, too, on who became the replacement.
Yes.
A lot of press that
right.
for Buntzich.
So this coming year, the whole Portage Mayor Snyder trial will play out, I'm guessing, and any kind of conviction or non-conviction, is he innocent, is he guilty, people are talking about it, the city is divided.
Right.
I lived there 30 years, and people are talking, you're either for Snyder or against Snyder.
And wasn't last year the Portage Council, things really got heated up toward the end of the year with the
very
council.
Very much.
You know, he was vetoing their raises.
Right,
and
it's going to come to a head this year.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we don't know. And it has the stamp of corruption on it again.
I think the trial date is June 4th.
Yeah. For now.
It's the latest.
It always gets bumped back.
Politics, right?
Politics.
Here we go. Politics.
Yeah, that's exactly it.
How about another story, Jerry?
Well, you know, the enemy of the people, you mentioned free press. We're mentioning that. And this year has been different for me as a journalist in the last 20 years, because people do look at me differently. When you mention you're a journalist, you're in the local newspapers. Now I'm the enemy of the people. Are you putting out fake news? This is national sentiment.
You're so biased.
Kind of biased, which I have to clarify on a regular basis that I'm a columnist, so everything I write is biased, so to speak. So I have to tell people that, but other reporters, of course, that's the word you don't want to hear.
Right.
A dirty word.
Has this been the worst year for criticism personally?
It has,
for sure. For us,
for sure it has,
definitely.
It just really ratcheted up where people just...
more skeptical, trust. More cynical, people questioning things, questioning if you're biased or not biased kind of thing. Yeah, right. So that was the year of 2017. That really captured that. And for me, being a journalist, and Krista, you must talk to all the reporters. They get the same kind of thing. You have to
definitely.
Be extra on tack for everything.
And even the people who call, I mean, they were always testy, but now they're just downright rude for the most part. I can't say everyone is, but, you know, even when I try and explain, really, I know this reporter really does strive to be objective and fair. Oh, that's a load of, you know, hogwash. Right.
This is almost like an unstory. It's like the story beneath, because who's really writing about it? And think about it. If you guys write about it, you're whining.
Yes, exactly. Right?
And you're just trying to make yourself look good.
Right. So we really can't do that. Right. So but I brought it up on your show, though.
Yeah, but this so this story goes really kind of uncovered in many ways.
It does, for the most, especially locally, because local newspapers in any demographic don't want to bring this up.
If you guys were on a national level, you'd probably get criticized, you know, or maybe fired or something. You never know.
Of course.
At the higher
levels.
We're
staying local.
Yeah.
That's why we're doing that.
Yeah, Jerry's more visible. I get to stay under the radar a little bit more, and I kind of prefer that.
Yeah,
more and more, I
bet
certainly
you do. Especially 2017.
The phone calls do come to me, though. I mean, and I like when they're really sticky, and I can kick them up to my managing editor or the executive editor. But, you know, a lot of the time, I just have to field them because everybody's busy.
Well, I like Jerry's shirt because he took off his jacket before he came in. That big Target's on the
right.
The
I always have it there.
Right. So you have added Jerry, you and Mark Chase in our shop. You guys,
the price you pay
you're welcome
it.
To it.
Yeah, right.
How about another one on your side?
Let me see. Well, for me, healthcare is a big story, and I think they're still going forward with the merger of Franciscan St. Anthony Health Hospital in Crown Point and Methodist Hospitals.
Which is controversial to some
people.
Yes,
it is. Mm-hmm. And mostly because people are concerned that that would leave Community Hospital, the only non-Catholic hospital in this general area, and what that would mean, it would have implications for women with ectopic pregnancies, a lot of women issues, you know, seeking abortions or for whatever reason, or mom's life, end of care. I know that, you know, the directives from the Catholic Church and Bishop Hying are that, you know, you should not, you know, just try, it should be let it run its course, exactly. And also, I read something recently about this notion of redemptive suffering. They're not going to give you all the morphine at the very end, the end days that you want, because there's this
sense
that, yes.
So it's all going to possibly play out in 2018.
Gender reassignment.
Here we go,
there is no
predicting stories for next year.
Yeah, no gender reassignment. So we'll see how that plays out. And you know, our health reporter, Giles Bruce, did research other parts of the country where they have come up with ideas with Planned Parenthood and other clinic groups that will step in and be an adjunct to the Catholic hospital so they can still provide those services.
Right.
So we'll see how
this
it
is
works
really interesting.
Out.
This is almost, again, another, it's not quite an unstory, but you've almost got to tie the pieces together to kind of see this is a very complex story.
Right. Yes. It's more than just the dollars and cents and will the government
morality,
approve it?
Because will seep
of,
into this.
Yeah. It's not just a dollars and cents and a monopoly story.
Oh, interesting.
It's more than a business story. So that intrigued me greatly.
On a related note to the medical field, how about the heroin and opioid crisis?
That was next on my
list. In this region.
Yes.
We always kind of talk about it, but in 2017, I think people talked about it more than ever. The coroners, Lake County and Porter County, are coming out saying, this is a real problem.
I think
Porter County Sheriff David Reynolds said this is, he made videos for this saying, this is a problem, we have to address it. And I don't know if we're addressing it enough in this region, or will we in this year? I don't know either. I once was told by a heroin user, he says, being a heroin addict is a full-time job. And I don't know if our efforts to curb or curtail this problem is a full-time job in our head yet. I think we kind of just go, it's for a subculture or whatever we don't care about as much, but it's affecting people's lives and families who you
it's think. It's middle-class families.
It's everybody.
It's kids in high school from good families, not just single-parent homes. I know the Lake County coroner, she has finally started keeping track of the deaths from overdoses from opioid.
Well, and that's been one of the big stories is this number, this high number. Right. Where they're going to set records. You know, we set records in 2017, I think, for the highest amount of overdose deaths.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, this is a huge, huge story.
So it was.
I know at the end of last year, Governor Holcomb did speak at Teebles and did say he agrees that this is a problem we really need. We're so far behind other states as far as detox centers, rehab centers, where to send people. I know Portage just recently, as did Griffith, their police stations are looking at it less and less as a criminal issue and more as a health issue.
Right.
And if someone comes in with an overdose issue or a problem, they won't arrest them. They will try and help them find a bed in a hospital.
Well, and they're using the word epidemic, which is really interesting. At what level do you have to be an epidemic?
Well, and here's the thing. Our local hospitals are completely unprepared for this. When someone comes in with an overdose, they get them out as soon as they can. If they admit someone, they have no way to detox them. It's just not anything that's on their radar yet. And I think that's the missing link that might be the next big story this year.
And that word sounds like hyperbole, Keith, when you say it, because it's an epidemic and it sounds like that. But it really is in this region an epidemic. I mean, it's not something that the media has generated. This isn't us.
Right.
This is the coroners saying this is an epidemic. This is the sheriff saying it's an epidemic.
And people coming to us, families saying, please.
Please help us. Yeah, get the word out. It's remove the stigma. Because
yes,
the stigma
remove the stigma. Exactly.
Again, it's interesting how these stories all tie together, because look at all the reports that came out this year about how far Indiana is behind in care for seniors and care for the mentally ill, and just we're behind on a lot of these things. Our ranking is real low. We're at the bottom. So, it's tied back to this, that infrastructure that doesn't really exist here to help people.
Except for being the fattest and the least fit. Then Indiana's always in the top 10.
And
we still are against
them. And not great on college education rates either, graduation rates.
Sometimes we do live down to our stereotype.
That's right.
We really do.
But you got another one.
You know, there's a story that really punched us all in the gut, and I just heard from somebody last week about this mentioning to me. The Hobart father who shot and killed his own daughter. He was showing gun safety to his boys, I think, in the Hobart home, and he shot and killed his daughter. Her name was Olivia Hummel.
Was she 4? 6?
Yeah, I think she was 6. Yeah, she was very young, and of course, it was just one of those tragic accidents.
Yeah, he was devastated, as far as you could tell from the reports.
Of course, and this is the kind of story that sticks with us, and when I ask readers, you know, think of 2017, they think of this story. Sadly enough. I mean, then you have the whole gun issue coming up and the gun safety and gun rights and it all. Again, you start with an incident, something that happened, and it's just a tragedy, and all this politics seeps into it, Keith. And that's 2017 in a nutshell. No matter what happens, politics seeps into everything and kind of takes over this incident.
You know, it's interesting. It seems like in the previous years when we talked about this, there was always several of those kind of heart stories, or stories that really kind of tore you up.
Right.
And you're right. It's about the only one that really pops out at me at the moment.
It does. Well, that and teen suicide. There was a movie, a series called 13 Reasons Why that came out, and we had some teen suicides. That's another unstory that we are not allowed to flesh out.
Yeah.
I've written about it several times through the years, and every time I do, I hear from people who are surviving members of a teenage suicide victim. But if you look at an obituary, and I'm bad at the point, when I read an obituary of a kid, like a teenager, and it doesn't list
the
cause of death,
what
do I always think of first thing?
This is in the same category as all the overdoses. Nobody's going to write a big story about an overdose.
Right.
I mean,
Well, and here's the thing. We, as editors, are sensitive to, not to interrupt you, but Carmen did a story earlier in the year about a young man who killed himself, Hispanic kid,
Carmen
McCollum. Mm-hmm. And she's our education reporter. And we really agonized about how to present it, and we eventually put it on A1. We talked to the family, but the concern was you now don't want to prompt copycats. So you want to put it out there periodically, give people a laundry list of places where they can go, families, kids, resources. But then you're always so afraid,
without glamorizing it in some form or fashion.
That somehow this is going to give someone else now an idea and start an epidemic, or a minor.
You know, with this criticism of the press, this heavy criticism of the press this past year, do you feel you've changed in any way what you're doing? I mean, it's follow-up to comment about how you're looking at stories.
Much more sensitive to parties. We weren't sensitive enough to
photos, and absolutely.
Children, juveniles, all that has to come into play now.
Is it a good thing?
No. Okay. I don't think it is. I think it's a needed thing.
It's a needed thing, yeah. But I think maybe we've been... What aggravates me is if people only knew how we agonize every day about how we're going to present things, how long we're going to make the story, how many people we're going to talk to, how we're going to couch
it. You people are heartless, you know.
Exactly.
Biased, all that stuff.
Right.
You know, Keith, some things from last year that left us, I want to bring attention to, is the no Gary Air Show to Lake Michigan. That was a big deal. People complained about that. Hopefully this year we'll have the air show again. And also Ernie Tallarico's International Human Cadaver Prosection Program at IUN. That was pulled the plug on, and I don't know why. It's kind of mysterious, but it's gone. And that was a big deal. People from around the world would come to IUN, to this region, to study and model that program. And I even took part in it once for a column. So these are things that we're here and not here. Like, who drives past Route 30 and you don't see the Radisson Hotel there anymore?
Right.
And
it's like Star Plaza, they pulled the plug a second time.
So Star Plaza is going to be gone also for sure. So
our landscape symphony, is changing. That Holiday Pop Symphony was so bittersweet. There was such a pall. You know, Kirk Musbrett, so adorable. He tried to make it so upbeat and really make everyone have fun. But there was just a pall over the whole thing because...
We know it's gone.
Yeah.
So now all we have there is memories playing for us. Mm-hmm. That's all we're going to have when we drive past there. Same with the Radisson. You go, there's a big hole. We know there's going to be a future there. It's supposed to be a hotel and a complex and all that. But right now, for older people like us who've lived decades and you've been there and took your families there, it's kind of gone.
So, I think that was one of the ones on your list, right, about this, about the hotel and everything going down?
Loss is a big one for me personally and as a journalist. I don't know if it's just because I'm getting older or if there is more loss this past year, last year. I don't know.
Do you think there's more loss this past year?
No, I think it's affecting us differently, I think. I think it's the same, but our sensibilities have changed. That's what I think. And I think age does play a role with it, Krista.
Yeah, maybe.
I talk to a lot of readers who are older readers, and their perspective of things is different than when I talk with younger kids or students and I go to high schools and talk to them. They're hopeful and idealistic and can't wait to conquer the future. And a lot of the older people are going, well, I'm just tired of this world and I'm unhappy with the country and I don't want any part of the future.
Glad I'm going out and
I'm
coming
going out.
In.
That's exactly it. It sounds funny, but it's so true, Keith.
Wow. That's amazing. Has there been any story that you really enjoyed working on this year for either one of you?
That's a good question.
You know, I really enjoyed researching, writing, interviewing, talking, making decisions about this specific story.
Well, you know, I enjoyed the women's marches that were happening in this region a lot. And people were joining and people were getting vocal. This is also the ripple effect from Trump getting into office, is that it woke everybody up. And everybody who's kind of complacent and Hillary's going to win and Trump's going to lose. And then it didn't happen that way. And they go, wait, hold on, I've got to vote. I have to get out there and be active again. I have to walk and do picket signs and demonstrations, and people are doing that all over. I went down to downtown Valparaiso, and I see these people picketing and demonstrating for causes they didn't care about last year or 2 years ago or 5 years ago. I enjoy seeing that and happening.
It's like, and the people who won feel so vindicated and thrilled and a little bit surprised.
Because they felt disenfranchised before.
Right.
Like nobody's paying attention to their voice.
Right.
So now you have this active engagement of democracy in action locally. It's fun
to
watch that.
That's a positive way to look at it.
Yeah. It is. I enjoyed that, right?
That is a positive way. How about you? Is there a story you worked on or something you followed or that was just, you found some joy in or enjoyment?
Well, this is going to sound so terrible because I take joy in such... You know, despair and desperation. I mean, that's what I love bringing to the forefront. I worked last year really closely with our health reporter on Indiana's infant mortality rate is among the highest in the nation. And he really got down and dirty into the story. He won a scholarship to go study for a week at USC. They have a big health journalism program there. But looking at the solutions, he got to travel throughout the state because they gave him the money. And there really are some interesting programs throughout the state looking at solutions and how to fix this. But there also, we really found some things as far as pollution and other things and poverty that it felt really good bringing that to light, that maybe we could actually solve something and move forward on something. We'll see if anything comes
of it. I like that word joy, though, Keith. You mentioned the word joy. There's no joy in Mudville because the Cubs lost, as we all know. We all just thought, they're going to roll again and get it, and they didn't make it.
And that was the big story last year.
That was a big story, of course.
That was a big story last year. So we're down here to the end. What haven't we covered, again, significant stories you think that we should have really paid attention to?
I think we should pay attention to the illegal immigrant issue that's taking place. They're still flying them out of Gary Airport, I believe, on a weekly or monthly basis, and people are protesting that.
Yep.
It's only going to get more increased and more intensified. In 2018, we have to address illegal immigration somehow. We're not doing it as a nation, so we have to do it kind of locally, and it's dividing people, this issue is. So that's something we're going to look at for 2018 for sure.
I would like to see us, we did pass taxes and everyone was all on board with it, and Republicans became the new group to make taxes lovable again so that we can fix our roads over the next 20 years. And I would like to see, I was shocked when I went to go get my license plate that I had to pay $80 instead of $57 mm-hmm. because Munster adopted a wheel tax. I'd like to see us have the same joy in raising taxes a little to support schools.
Interesting.
That's interesting because as a national issue, it's on the other side of this. So,
right. But
at the local level, we're having to do
We think it's great. Yeah. Well, and the passing the referendums, that's a whole nother can of shrimp cocktail we can get into later, to quote Rudy Clay, the late Rudy
Clay. The late great.
Late great Rudy Clay. But yeah, I think that we really need to look at, you know, leveling that and balancing that out.
We're still too close to New Year's. She's talking about shrimp cocktail.
Yeah.
And, you know, makes you wonder what she had.
Everything relates to food. Don't even get me started. That's, you know.
So any other predictions for this year? Coming up.
This year coming up, I think someone else in the region, a public official, will be indicted for public corruption charges, even though you think it's unheard of. And how can that happen with all the corruption we've had? And you have Buntzich and you have Snyder on the docket now. I think somebody else will be indicted because the feds, once they're on you, they are on you. And they're going to find something.
And the new guy pledged, Thomas Kirsch, the new U.S. Attorney for the Northern District in Hammond, pledged he's going to keep it going.
Just like David Kapp.
He's got a good staff, yep, and he's going to keep David
Kapp's
momentum.
They're here to find that, and I think they're going to find it. So that's what I think is going to happen in 2018.
It's going to be like they used to be scared of, if Mike Wallace is here to see you, if the FBI is here to check your records, like, man, you are in trouble.
Yeah, the feds don't mess around.
Yeah. So how about you? Anything you predict this coming year? Going to be a story out there?
I think more loss. We forgot to mention VU, the law school.
That's right.
Really revered, well-respected law school, not just in the region.
And we'll
here.
Have to see how that plays out.
Yeah. Okay. I don't know what's going to happen, but.
Well, this is always a fun show. I enjoyed having both of you here. It's always
show. Interesting
to reflect on this. Thanks for being here. Really
it was
appreciate
really
it.
Really fun. Thanks, Keith. Thanks.
Lakeshore Focus airs on Fridays at 7:30 p.m. and is rebroadcast on Sundays at 9:30 a.m. on Lakeshore PBS. Hundreds of rural Indiana communities could see big changes if a proposed bill makes its way to the governor's desk. House Republicans want to eliminate roughly one-third of the state's townships. They say doing so would save money. But as Indiana Public Broadcasting's Barbara Brosier tells us, people living in small communities say that it'll come as a cost to them.
Mary Frances Ho Settler is flipping through a notebook she kept from her time as Jefferson Township trustee.
8, 9...
She's counting the number of calls she received from township residents each month.
You're really on call 24/7.
There's just over 1,100 residents in this western Owen County township, but they kept her busy during the 12 years she oversaw the community. Township trustees have a long list of duties, including everything from providing fire protection to maintaining cemeteries. And many of the calls trustees get are from residents who need township assistance for propane, electric, or food.
Most times it's a matter of, I've hit a rough spot, you know, someone's gotten ill, we're temporarily unemployed.
It's government on a personal level that folks here are used to. There's nowhere to buy gas or milk in their township, but people here know who they can count on when they need help.
It's a nice rural area.
But under a proposal at the State House, Jefferson Township could cease to exist. Among other things, House Bill 1005 would require townships with fewer than 1,200 residents to merge with others.
A blanket law isn't going to be to the best advantage of every person in the state of Indiana.
This isn't the first time legislators have considered changes to Indiana's township government structure. Former Governor Mitch Daniels charged the Indiana Commission on Local Government Reform with coming up with recommendations for a better local government structure. The Kern and Shepherd report followed. It included a recommendation to shift township responsibilities to the county. The Indiana Township Association opposed that plan, but Executive Director Debbie Driscoll says they support this year's bill.
We have been listening to the folks that are in these chambers tell us that if we do not reform ourselves, that they will do it for us. So that brought us to the table to negotiate the best deal that we could, rather than lose our township boards or township government altogether.
The bill also addresses issues of accountability among township officials, putting salary caps on township board members, and giving people options for recourse if a trustee denies them an application for aid. But it's the proposed consolidation that everyone is talking about.
I've had a lot of questions about how does this affect the configuration of my school corporations.
That's Katrina Hall, public policy director at the Indiana Farm Bureau. The organization came out against township reform last time legislators considered it, and it maintains that position with this new bill. Hall says people in rural communities value the low costs and efficiency of township government.
We are pretty confident that when this plays out, that there will be a shifting of taxes from the neighboring townships onto these ones that generally are going to have a lower budget right now.
It's unclear how much money consolidation could save the state or cost the impacted townships. But people living in small communities like Jefferson Township really don't care. It's part of their identity. It's home. And they don't want that to change. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Barbara Brozier.
A House committee advanced that bill by a 10-0 vote this week after making some changes to it. One of the changes that was made in committee would allow the new units to require that at least one township board member live in the old consolidated district. Committee Chairman Kevin Mahan says that the bill is not a finished product, but he does note that the forced consolidation isn't required until 2023.
We're going to have some little things that are going to come up. We're going to have questions that's going to come up that may need some more clarifying, and you know that's why we come back.
The bill still is now headed to the House Ways and Means Committee for next review. And that's it for Regionally Speaking for today. I'm Chris Nolte. Thanks for being with us. Coming up tomorrow and Thursday, it's Reporters Roundtable Thursday. We'll have a wrap-up with reporters from Northwest Indiana Media to talk about stories that they've covered online as well as in print. And we'll have a special feature as well, Indiana and the Blizzard of 1978. It's coming up tomorrow on Regionally Speaking.